Welcome to today's edition of the Clay Travis and Buck Sexton Show podcast.
Third hour, Clay and Buck is here. We've got much to discuss in this hour, so make sure you stay with us. And if you missed anything up to this point, the Clay and Buck podcast, a great place to go. Clay Travis and Buck Sexton Show, to be technical. But we also had over the weekend our first election special dropped on Sunday of the podcast. So if you are not yet a podcast subscriber, we do a one-stop shop, one podcast weekly. That's just all the best political interviews, talking about the issue state by state, the polls. You want to be super up to speed going into this election. The election special is dropping on Sundays. Listen to the iHeart app wherever you get your podcasts. Now, with all that, the economy right now, I'm a big fan of medieval movies, you know, medieval warfare, general. I like all that stuff. Gladiator's obviously ancient Rome, but I even watched like the bad Robin Hood with Russell Crowe that nobody saw. That was actually a Ridley Scott movie.
I don't even remember that. Yeah. One. I know they did the Kevin Costner Robin.
Yeah. Oh,
right?
Dude.
I don't even remember the Russell Crowe version.
First of all, that had Alan Rickman in it, with Hans Gruber from Die Hard, which was amazing. It had Bryan Adams of Canada with his "Everything I Do,"
yeah.
You know, yeah,
oh, yeah.
Great,
it's an
you know,
iconic song.
The Robin Hood that doesn't really, I don't know, it's okay, it's a good watch still, but I watched the more updated version with Russell Crowe. Wasn't very good. I bring it up just because in all these movies, there's usually this moment in the battle where you hear the guys, you know, the bad guys yell "retreat," and they're all running and they're getting hit with the stray arrow here and there, and maybe one, like the big boss bad guy, stays behind for the final battle. But like the bad guys are all running for the woods. That's kind of like your 401k right now, or your investments in general. We're all running for the woods, getting hit with arrows. It's rough right now out there, and a lot of this was very predictable. In fact, many predicted it, because it turns out when you spend trillions and trillions of dollars, and who knows even on what, but in this case, when you pay people to stay home, when you pay people not to work, and then you find out that was a totally unnecessary and really crazy policy, the Fed is whom we turn to now. It's almost like we're like, "Oh, Fed, tell us what the future of monetary policy is." The Fed, when the economy was crushing it under Trump, should have taken different action. This is the reality of this, but didn't want to take certain actions. And I mentioned this guy before, Professor Siegel of Wharton Business School at the University of Pennsylvania, is saying people need to stop thinking of Jerome Powell and these people as, "Oh, they're going to fix it." They caused the problem by being asleep at the wheel.
The Fed has just, you know, executed the last 2 years one of the biggest policy mistakes in the 110-year history of the Fed by staying so easy when everything was booming and pointing to, "My God, inflation is going to be a terrible problem." And now, oh yeah, we did goof badly there, which he never really admitted. And now we're saying, "Oh my God, he's the God that's going to stop inflation and he's going to crush the wages, which have fallen behind inflation by 3, 4, 5%. You can't have cost push inflation when you're lagging inflation. You can't blame wages for inflation when they're 2, 3, 4, 5% behind inflation.
Clay, can I just say, you know, first of all, the Fed is a political instrument now. I mean, it has been for a long time, but I think the same way the Supreme Court, everyone realizes, is now just overtly political. The Fed is much more politicized than it certainly pretends to be. And look at what got us to this point. Look at what they decided to do the last 2 years. Biden's Fed chair screwed this thing up, and now everyone's turning around going, "I can't afford the house I want to buy. I can't afford groceries. Gas prices are going up." Yeah, because the people in charge are idiots.
That actually was really well said, but it's also got me even more nervous than I was before, because the analogy that immediately kind of connected in my head is Jerome Powell is Dr. Fauci, except now Jerome Powell is in charge of trying to fix the mess that he created. You know, at least with COVID, we can kind of just...
Fauci didn't create the Wuhan coronavirus. That we will admit that, yes.
Well, the taxpayer dollars may have helped to create it before all of a sudden.
But he wasn't in a lab with the beakers saying, "I want to do gain of function myself."
The response to COVID, Fauci primarily created, and it was a disaster. And the benefit is now that it's a disaster, they're trying to shuffle Fauci off the stage, even though he won't, like the music's playing like at the end of an awards banquet and he's trying to get off the stage, but, and he won't leave. They're trying to get him off. But we basically have with Jerome Powell, they help to create the massive situation that we're in now. And then as the audio clip we just played, I can't stop thinking now we're relying on this guy to fix it. Like, you created this mess, and now you're supposed to be the expert who fixes it. And, Buck, the thing that I'm hearing from people more and more, I was out on the weekend, out on the road this weekend, met a lot of great listeners, got to watch the Florida Gators lose to my University of Tennessee Volunteers, which doesn't happen very often, so I'm still enjoying it. But so many people out there, conversations going on about mortgage rates. Like, when people want to come up, they want to talk about the economy and everything else. And what I'm hearing from so many people is, hey, I got a 2.5% or 3% mortgage locked in. I like my house. There's no way I'm moving as mortgage rates now, Buck, are rapidly accelerating towards 7%. And I haven't heard anybody talk about why this isn't potentially a calamitous situation. But for a lot of you out there listening to me, you know what exactly what I'm talking about. Your house might have increased in value substantially. You're fortunate that you got a 2.5% or 3%. Maybe you're about to have a new baby. Maybe your kids just moved out of the house and you would ordinarily be in the process of, you'd be looking for a new place. Buck, I think the housing apparatus is going to get locked up, the likes of which we have not seen in a long time, because people aren't going to be willing to give up their 2.5% or 3% mortgage rates to buy a new place and take on 6.5% or 7%.
And so this is just going to continue in this direction. It's going to be, you know, the correction here is going to be painful for a while. And I think it's just worth noting for everybody that there were decisions made. This isn't just the natural, you know, this isn't the natural cycle of things. This was in response to, I think everyone liked that there was all this cash sloshing around and you had the very, very, very low rates and nobody wanted to be the one to say the party was over. They waited too long and now here we are. One other thing came up over the weekend. I just want to throw this out to you, Clay. This was interesting because one criticism that I know a lot of people on the right have of their elected representatives is our side lacks the discipline, unified discipline of the other side on political issues. You know, they can count on, whether it's the passage of Obamacare or now the passage of the Inflation Reduction Act or you name it. Or impeachments of the president, which is where we're going here. Democrats all in lockstep. And also, it seems like our side is not as willing, the Republicans are not as willing to just roll up their sleeves and really throw some punches. People are talking about we're going to have a Republican House here, and the Democrats have. It is a true thing to say that Democrats have now made impeachment a purely political tool used to effectively harass a president in office that you don't like, right? I mean, they did it twice. They did it after the Trump presidency, even the second time. The whole thing is crazy. What are they even doing? Chuck Todd brought up the possibility of the GOP impeaching Biden next year. Here's what he said.
I can't get over the first thing you said, which you said it's very likely that we're going to see impeachment votes. I mean, is this good for the Republican Party that the first, you know, basically they take over the House and then hold impeachment votes on Biden? Does that not just continue what everything that they claimed that the party had been claiming they were pushing back against?
Well, can I just notice the way it's framed? Well, they say that they're not into doing these kinds of things. So isn't that then going against what they used to say they didn't want to do? Yeah, but that was before they impeached Donald Trump twice, right?
Yeah, my thing on impeachment is, unless you have a realistic chance of getting to 67, it's just a boring sideshow.
Oh, but this is all about the optics, right? They don't think they're actually going to get removal. It's just impeach a president. So yeah. Biden's impeached too. It now becomes a stain on the record.
Well, I think you just impeach. Everybody gets impeached from now on. And again, to me, it's just a huge sideshow, because unless you have 67 votes in the Senate to be able to remove a president, what the House does doesn't really matter. I do think Mayorkas and Merrick Garland have been so incredibly bad at their job in the cabinet, in particular Merrick Garland based on the raid on Trump, and certainly Mayorkas just based on the border, although you could argue that all he's doing is implementing the instructions of his leader. I don't, if it's not going to remove, I would rather focus personally, Buck, on the COVID failures and Dr. Fauci.
I'm with you on all that. I mean, but remember, they're not going to be able to pass any legislation, and it would give an opportunity. I'm going to be very clear. It's an abuse of the process. But here's the question. How do you respond to the abuses of the process that Democrats have normalized and now done multiple times against Trump? I mean, I can pose the question again, little devil's advocacy here, a little getting over the edge with this stuff. But
would you vote that's the question. If you were a congressperson and they said, hey, Buck Sexton, what should we focus on? Do you think we should impeach the president?
I think it depends. I think you could say that, you know, it is impeachable based on the standard that Democrats have set for Joe Biden to effectively nullify immigration law in this country and just act like federal law doesn't actually count anymore when it comes to immigration. Now, maybe there are other areas people want to focus on. Fine. But I mean, I would put it to you this way as well. What is the certainty in your mind that either a Trump or DeSantis or Youngkin or whoever, right? But the next Republican president in their first 4 years will be impeached. I would put mine at 100%. I think this is what Democrats do now.
Assuming that they have control of the House at some point, obviously.
Yes, of course, right. But if Democrats have the votes.
I'm not sure that they would. I think Republicans in 24 are going to have the House and the Senate.
I should have set up the... I'm just saying, when Democrats have the votes to impeach a Republican president going forward,
I think it's going to become very common. Here's what I would say in terms of, does it play well politically? I think this plays into Democrat hands, because this allows them to continue the January 6th, our democracy is under siege charade, right? Oh, they tried to overthrow Joe Biden and not allow him to ever become president. And what's the first thing that the Republicans do when they get back control of the House? They immediately impeach him. Republicans are the threat to democracy. Now, you and I know that that's not true, but with all of the media allies that are out there, I don't think that you gain personally by impeaching Joe Biden, because it doesn't go anywhere, and it just further allows them to argue, oh, but imagine if they did have control of the government, our sacred institutions are under attack, and look at how quickly they made this move. That's what I think the storyline would be. So I think it's a net negative. I would go after Fauci with everything that I have, because I think he's responsible for much of certainly our COVID response, but also I still want to know how COVID developed, and we still don't know, and how much American taxpayer dollars might have been involved there. And I would go after the 87,000 IRS agents with everything that I have.
You're basically going to have a GOP majority in the House that talks about policy they would implement in 2 years and does a bunch of hearings. I mean, look, I'll say this. The Benghazi hearings, that, yeah, it was good for some people's future cable news careers, but didn't do anything. And the GOP got very focused in on that.
So what's January 6th done? The positive of a Republican Congress is not what they're going to be able to put into law. It's what they're going to keep Joe Biden from being able to put into law. I wish we'd had one the last 2 years. Maybe we wouldn't be sitting at 8.3% inflation.
Yeah, I mean, I generally don't like the eye for an eye view of politics when it involves breaking unspoken norms, but I'm a little more open to it now that I've been in the past. I'll say after
I think there's a lot of people
after two impeachments of Trump, I'm just like, how do we correct this unless we show them that we're willing to do the same to them as they do to us? That's the problem.
The impeachments of Trump actually bother me way less, Buck, because it's so inherently political, and I think everybody can see it, than the Mar-a-Lago raid does, because crossing the Rubicon of raiding like Merrick Garland did, to me, is a bigger deal than impeaching Trump twice, because that was just so innately political. You knew how it ended. Like, they're legitimately trying to put him in prison now.
The Democrats talk about democracy. Democracy dies in darkness and the threats to our sacred institutions. The easiest, fastest way to destroy democracy in this country is to have a Department of Justice that will lock up. Only have to do it to one. Lock up a political opponent that threatens the regime. That's it. It's over.
That is the actual threat to democracy, which is why all of these the arguments about our sacred democracy are so patently and transparently lies, because virtually no Democrat has in any way that I've seen spoken out against what Merrick Garland did with his Department of Justice at Mar-a-Lago. One college in this country goes out of their way to make sure every American that wants to be informed can be for free. Hillsdale College. For years, they've been producing online video series you and I can learn from. These video courses you can watch on demand, absolutely free of charge, all inspired from the teaching that goes inside the Hillsdale lecture halls and classrooms. The video courses taught by educators at Hillsdale using high video production values to make the viewing intriguing and interesting. Why would a college go to all this expense and do this all for free? Because Hillsdale's message is to explain and defend our nation's liberties. Their latest offering and one of their all-time favorites is currently featured online. That's The Great American Story, A Land of Hope, and Constitution 101 is the other. Enroll in one of these free courses from Hillsdale. You can do this. Again, it's free by going to clayandbuckforhillsdale.com. Check them out. clayandbuckforhillsdale.com. Welcome back in, Clay Travis, Buck Sexton Show. Buck, last week we had Tiffany Smiley on. She is the Washington Republican nominee taking on Senator Patty Murray in the state of Washington. We've got a lot of you listening right now in Seattle. We appreciate all of you. We also have a large collection in Spokane of people that are listening as well. And many of you are going to be forced and tasked with making the decision who to vote for in this election. And I think many people are totally sleeping on this race. Newest Trafalgar Group poll, Washington Senate race, Tiffany Smiley against Patty Murray. It is now a 2-point race. I don't think anybody on their card of likely outcomes had Tiffany Smiley grabbing a Senate seat in the state of Washington. Yet things are so bad on the economic front and on the just basic leadership front in the state of Washington that, Buck, Tiffany Smiley, dark horse candidate, we talked last week with Christine Drazen in Oregon as well, don't sleep on rational people coming to the Republican Party side in the Pacific Northwest.
I think for so many people, governors and a lot of stuff that that was state level officials, it was, I'm a Democrat or I'm a Republican, and so I just vote that way. I think there might be a change, and we won't know till after this election, a change, though, in that thinking, where it's less about brand affiliation with Democrat. I'm a Democrat. I live in Washington State. And more, this person is going to make decisions that affect my day-to-day yes. life. I don't want some lunatic or some imbecile, I don't care what their political party is. If that mentality has any salience, has any momentum right now, you might see some crazy upsets in some very blue states.
I also think the Republican mom angle, candidates who are Republicans and moms, is wildly underrated in terms of its ability to appeal to swing voters. You got to come through for a company working hard to make everybody in this country that much more comfortable at home. Your support for MyPillow, really remarkable. You know, I was reading Wall Street Journal over the weekend. Alan Dershowitz is one of the attorneys who is defending Mike Lindell. And he said it was outrageous that Mike Lindell had his phone seized, that there was no way to justify this, that it was entirely a Department of Justice raid against Mike Lindell because of his politics. Again, I'm paraphrasing Alan Dershowitz, legendary attorney in the Wall Street Journal over the weekend. What can you do to stand up for Mike Lindell and stand up for everyone's right to have their own political opinions? Well, you can go to MyPillow right now. Go click on the radio listener specials. Use the code Clay and Buck. That's MyPillow.com. Code Clay and Buck.
Welcome back to Clay and Buck. We are now joined by the U.S. Senator for Alabama. Senator Tommy Tuberville is with us now. Senator Tuberville, appreciate you making the time for us, sir.
Yes, sir. Coach, please. Please call me Coach.
Coach Tuberville. Yes, sir. Whatever you prefer. So tell me this. You just went into a, and you and Claire are going to talk about the sports things in a minute or two here. I leave that to you folks. But on Title IX, I know that you're all over this issue, and the Biden administration, as of a few months ago, was pushing some very radical interpretations of Title IX that would have really affected sports and education more generally. You're on this issue, and I know you've just got some updates on it for us. What is going on with the fight over women's sports, men's sports, Title IX, and the transgender interpretation of it, or transgender issues affecting Title IX right now?
Well, thank you, Buck, for having me on. And you're exactly right. This is a complete mess. You know, this radical administration is trying to get in everybody's business. You know, Title IX was probably the biggest success in federal government in the last 50 years. And, of course, June was the 50th anniversary of Title IX. It did so much for women and women's sports. And 3 to 6% of the young girls played high school sports back 50 years ago. Now over 50 to 6% do. So built leadership and all those things. But Joe Biden, when he got in office, he let off his radicals start and try to attack Title IX because they want biological boys to be able to play in women's sports. Now, in the last 15 years, we've had 28 winners of biological boys competing against girls that have won championships, 28. One is way too many. And so Joe Biden has basically tried to change the definition of sex. You know, they want to change the gender identity in Title IX. And by doing that, it's going to cause damage and it's going to create a not a level playing field that was originally created for women. So it's a shame that we're having to go through this, but this is the days that we live in. This is administration. This is the progressive left that is attacking women. And where are the women's rights group? I don't understand this because I can remember when Title IX was put in, Buck. I mean, this was a huge, huge movement. And now we have just the opposite happening, and nobody's really standing up. But we're going to stand up for them in Washington, D.C., and we're going to fight back against this progressive group and the people that want to tear down women's athletics. We're not going to allow it to happen, and hopefully we can keep bouncing this off the wall until hopefully the cavalry shows up here in the next few months.
Okay, for people out there who are not understanding, and thanks for coming on, Coach Stubberville, basically what they're trying to do is expand the definition of Title IX to encompass gender identity. And what that means to everybody out there listening is, if you got a guy, like happened with Leah Thomas up in the Penn women's swimming, if you got a guy who decides, hey, I'm going to identify now as a woman, they're trying inside the Biden administration, and this is super radical, so I want everybody to understand this, they're trying to define Title IX to encompass gender identity so biological men, grown men, can decide to compete against women and identify as women and become NCAA champions, become world champions. I mean, this is really crazy stuff. And Coach, you mentioned the silence. I know you talk to a ton of women's coaches out there, I bet, all over Alabama and beyond. They come up to me all the time when I'm on campus and they say, this is a huge deal for the girls on my teams, for the high school girls that I'm recruiting, for the little girls, my own daughters, you know, some of them are saying that are growing up and having to deal with this. I don't think most people out there understand how crazy this is. How much of your conversations privately are people sharing with you saying this is a big deal, but they're terrified to say something publicly about it?
Well, they are, because this administration has basically got something to use against you, basically call you a racist if you try to go against anything that this administration puts out there. And they're keeping people from talking. That they will actually come after you, and you're seeing it right now as we speak. People are being attacked on from the left to the right because they're speaking out. And at the end of the day, people are starting to be gun shy about this. But Clay, this is something we got to step up and fight. I mean, because it's a fight worth making. We're going to start losing women's athletics. We're going to start losing what has been built in the last 50 years. Young girls and women need the opportunity to be able to compete and learn as men and boys do, whether it's a team sport or individual sport, learn time, learn work ethic, learn to work with other people, learn to compete, learn how to win, learn how to lose, all those things you get from sports. But this is absolutely asinine, to be honest with you, that we're even thinking and talking about this, and we're going to fight it all the way to the end, tooth and nail, and hopefully, as I said, we get some sense back in this country in the next few months.
Speaking to Senator Tuberville of Alabama, Senator, just next door, do you think you're going to have Herschel Walker as a Senate colleague? And how do you think it's looking for Kemp to keep his seat in the governor's mansion?
Well, I think both of them will win. I think people are sick and tired of what's going on. And, you know, it's obviously it's this far left progressive group that is pushing all these radical agendas. Herschel Walker will be excellent. I've worked with him. I've talked with him. I've campaigned with him. I've raised money for him. He's a common sense guy that believes in this country. And that's what scares me. The far left talks about things, but they talk about things that don't make this country better. It makes this country worse. Like this Title IX we're just talking about. Kemp will win. And I hope we got a lot of, grass to cover in the next, month. But if we had election today, Herschel Walker would win.
Last question for you, Coach. It's the biggest question everybody's debating in the South right now. You probably know you got to talk about opinions for a living, but this one may make you a little bit nervous. Who's the best team in college football this year, Georgia or Alabama?
Oh, Georgia. Right now they're playing better than everybody else. They've got a complete football team from top to bottom. I know Kirby well. I play golf with him a lot, and he said this could be one of his better teams. And then, of course, Nick's going to get a lot better. He didn't play that well against Texas. That was probably something that's probably going to help them. But he's got to find some receivers. He's got to be able to stretch the field from sideline to sideline and deep down the field, because people are going to gang up on their running game if they don't do that. Their defense is good, but they've got to get a few more options in their offense.
Senator,
who's the best athlete, I was just going to say, it made me think, who's the best athlete in the Senate?
Best athlete in the Senate, that'd be hard to say, to be honest with you. I tell you, Rand Paul's a good athlete. I play golf with him a lot.
Ted Cruz has a wicked hook shot, you know. Ted Cruz got some basketball game, just throwing it out there. We've seen it.
Yeah, he's got some game. He really does. I think Josh Hawley also. But, you know, when we're in D.C., we're working all the time. You don't get to do a lot with these other guys. I'm sure.
Hey, you've been recruiting your whole life. You got to be able to eye talent, Coach, no matter where you are. A suit jacket or gym shorts, you got to be able to find the talent.
Well, you're probably right. I'm losing my touch, but it's hard to, unless you get them out there and see them doing things. And you said Ted Cruz, he plays basketball almost every day, and he works hard at it. But there's some good athletes, I'm sure.
Roll Tide, right, Clay? This is where I say.
No. You got the Auburn War Eagle with you right now.
Oh,
that's
sorry.
Exactly right.
My bad.
I'm trying to teach him college football, Coach. He's working on it.
That was my bad. Senator Tuberville, I apologize. War Eagle, sir, and thank you so much for joining us. We appreciate it.
Well, thank you. We need to get back on and do the NIL one day, because this is a disaster getting waiting to happen. So,
you know what? We need to have a long conversation on it. That's a good idea.
I can contribute this, Clay, to the analysis of the Crimson Tide, which is Alabama, right?
That's correct. You got that one.
The word crimson comes from a red dye made from a bug called the kermes, which for centuries was a primary way of making the color red to dye garments. That's where we get the term crimson from. So when people are running around yelling about the Crimson Tide, they're talking about red bug dye.
I don't think that's accurate.
Oh, my God, Buck.
That is totally accurate. Think,
no, well, I mean, maybe. The Crimson Tide is like it rolls in. It's like a red tide.
No, I'm just saying the derivation of the word crimson. That's all.
Oh. I thought you were saying that the etymology of the Crimson Tide.
No, I'm saying word crimson comes from bug dye.
Oh, he's too smart. See, this is the problem, Coach. He got me all crossed up. I can't even tell what's going on.
Senator Tuberville, before I make a fool of myself here, I'm going to let you go. Thank you so much for being with us. We appreciate it.
Quit reading those comic books, Buck, please.
Wow. You know what, Clay? Well, let's come back. Let's come back in a second. We'll close up shop here after our fun chat there with Senator Tuberville. Before we close up shop today on the show, we all know the fight for life is underway right now, and so many of you listening across the country like me are pro-life. But what if I told you can do something about it? Sure, voting is important and living your principles is important. But how can you be involved in this fight for life and actually save lives? You need to know about an organization called Preborn. They run the Preborn Pregnancy Clinics. They began their mission more than 16 years ago. They help women with unplanned pregnancies by offering free ultrasounds. You know what the Democrats are doing in blue states across the country, the extremism of their positions, abortion all the time for any reason at any time. You can help save lives right now with Preborn Pregnancy Clinics. Here's what they do. When an expectant mother hears her baby's heartbeat and sees the image of her baby on ultrasound, she sees a life and often chooses life much more often than not when she sees that baby on the ultrasound. Preborn positions their clinics in states where a lot of abortions unfortunately occur, and as a result, Preborn has rescued hundreds of thousands of babies' lives. They're the country's largest provider of free ultrasounds. But this entire movement is dependent upon you, the pro-life community. It's not enough just to believe things. You have to take action. Take action today to help save the lives of tiny babies. Preborn has a mission to save 40,000 babies' lives this year. One ultrasound is just $28. $140 helps to rescue five babies' lives. But whatever you can donate helps. $5, $10, whatever you can spare today can help save a life. Use your cell phone, dial pound 250, and say the keyword baby. That's pound 250, say baby. Or you can donate securely online. Just go to this website, preborn.com/buck. That's preborn.com/BUCK. Live your principles. Save lives today. Preborn.com/buck. All right, Clay, I really enjoyed talking to Senator Tuberville there. And I'm sure we'll get some emails from our VIPs. Go to clayandbuck.com to subscribe about how I am going to, my etymology is solid. My football analysis could use a little bit of work, though. I'm working on the War Eagle versus Roll Tide situation. So I'm seeing what I can do.
It speaks well to Tuberville's ability to bridge gaps, because Alabama-Auburn is by far the most contentious conflict, maybe in the country, in terms of any rivalry-type setting. But Alabama and Auburn fans overwhelmingly agree with what Tommy Tuberville is advocating for them in the Senate. You're a work in progress on the college football fan.
I'm making some gains on it for sure. We also got some great emails in for today's show about VIPs, or from VIPs, I should say. Here's one. I thought this was great. It's from Jim. He says, Clay and Buck, I hunted submarines as a Navy helicopter pilot in the 1990s. I'm glad I was not a submariner. Tough job. I highly recommend Greyhound with Tom Hanks, which was an Apple TV movie, I believe. Hunt for Red October. I just watched that with Carrie recently. It was her first ever time. Great film. I mean, why do they have a Scottish guy playing a Russian defector? Side note, who cares? But he gave a warning for Alec Baldwin firearm usage in that movie, which is true. And then Run Silent, Run Deep. I've actually never heard of that one. And he also wants more history podcast, Clay, which we got to work on. He says, hey, Clay, Gig'em Ags.
There you go. Texas A&M fighting Aggies.
What is that? Oh, Texas that A&M fighting. Okay.
Yeah, that's a Texas A&M.
I got to add that war cry to my repertoire.
I mentioned earlier, people who are like, where did that email come from? I cannot imagine being in a submarine underwater for months at a time. I would go, everyone who's done it, I'm sure there's a bunch of people listening to us right now who have done it. A good friend of mine from high school did it. I would go bonkers locked up, you know, underground like that.
The World War II submarines, and if anyone wants to read a book that goes into this at some extent, there's a book called Shadow Divers. It's actually about wreck diving. I gave it as a recommendation to Carrie's dad recently. Everyone I've ever recommended this book to, it's just such a good read. It's like, it's a fun, fast read, but it's about these wreck divers who find a U-boat off the coast of New Jersey. U-boat is short for Unter whatever boat, which is, you know, the German word for submarine. And it's a great book, goes into this at some detail, but they were mostly, you know, they were largely surface ships that would dive, right? So they would often come up, certainly for attacking and just to get some fresh air. But as I said, 75%, I think it was something like 30 or 40,000 German World War II submariners died, which was 75% of the overall number of people who were in those submarines. And their unrestricted warfare strategy with the submarines at one point actually came pretty close to the goal. Submarines were super effective for periods of time before counter submarine measures got much better. But yes, Clay, I think that would be my last choice.
Last choice for you.
Last choice for me. Yeah. Wouldn't be able to handle that one.
I mean, more credit power to the people who are able to do it. But I think that would be the single toughest.
Have you read Shadow Divers?
Difficult. No, I've not.
Okay, after football season, I'm not going to bother you with anything during. But since you have seen some after football season, you got to read Shadow Divers. Tell me if you like it, and then because also super deep sea, like deep sea wreck diving is another thing that's like not high on my list, but fun to read about. You know, it's cold, it's super dangerous.
Yeah, can't see anything.
House of the Dragon on HBO.
Yay or nay? I'm liking it. Six episodes in. I know that's the only show that I can watch other than college football or the NFL. By the way, I will be in South Carolina this weekend. Looking forward to being at Clemson for their game against NC State. I'll be there with Big Noon kickoff. I have not been to a game. Have not been to Clemson before. I hear it's beautiful. So I'm looking forward to visiting that part of the country. But House of the Dragons, six episodes in, it's really good. It's the Game of Thrones spinoff prequel series. And I know Game of Thrones killed it in terms of the interesting phrase there, probably given all the people who die in it, has been wildly popular. I'm impressed through six episodes with this new. It's better than I expected it would be.
Would you say that some of the key moments in the original Game of Thrones were the most shocked you've ever been in real time watching either a TV show or movie? Because there were a couple of times where... I grew up watching action movies, and I still was like, wow, I can't believe that just happened.
The Red Wedding episode is the single most shocking episode, I think, in the history of streaming or television or whatever you want to say. I've never seen anything like it.
Yeah.
It was truly something.
Pretty crazy. Yeah. All right, we got more coming for you tomorrow. Please spread the word about the show. We're in countdown to election mode. People need to be listening to Clay and Buck. We'll talk to you tomorrow.
When you drive a vehicle so reliable it's backed by a 10-year, 100,000-mile limited warranty, you stop thinking about what you can't do and start doing what you never thought possible. Visit your local Kia dealer today to see what you're capable of in a vehicle that inspires confidence around every corner. Kia. Movement that inspires.
Call 800-333-4KIA for details. Always drive safely. Limited inventory available. Warranties include 10-year, 100,000-mile powertrain and 5-year, 60,000-mile basic. Warranties are limited. See retailer for details.